So cervical fluid, we love it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It can teach us so much. And it's also perfectly natural. Welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, where I share tangible techniques to help you embody your femininity, enhance your sex life, and elevate your relationships. I'm your host, Eleanor Hadley, sensuality coach and founder of Sensual Yoga. Now let's unleash your inner sensualista. Hello, my loves, and welcome to episode number 18 of the Sensuality Academy podcast. I'm so excited this week because this is the first time that I am introducing a guest on the show, and I'm really lucky to know some pretty amazing people who are doing pretty amazing things in the world, and I can't wait to share all of these wonderful people with you. So today I'm chatting with Liz Burton of Wild Womb Co., all about fertility awareness. Now, you might be wondering, fertility awareness? What, Eleanor? Since when is this a podcast about fertility? Well, it's not. But one of the cornerstones of my work in my one-on-one coaching and in my programs is sharing about the importance, potency, and power of connecting with our menstrual cycles. Especially for those of us who are menstruators and identify as women, I believe that getting in tune with your natural cycles is an incredible way for us to embody our femininity and become overall more sensual beings. And that is what I am all about. Now, I know when you hear the word fertility, you probably think of it in the context of conception and pregnancy. But how often do you think about your fertility when you're not actively trying to conceive? If you're anything like me, your answer is probably never. For many of us, we spend years actively trying not to get pregnant until maybe one day you decide that you do. But fertility is so much more than this and can be a huge indicator of your overall health. Now, fertility awareness can also have a huge impact on your sex life. As you'll hear me discuss with Liz, your body is an incredible machine that will tell you how fertile you are throughout the month, so you can plan accordingly in regards to protection, type, and style of sex. Honestly, this has been such a game changer for my sex life. You're in for an absolute treat with this episode. You'll learn what on earth fertility awareness is, how to use the method to get more in touch with your cycle and your body, the different biomarkers of fertility, what's wrong with the pill, and so much more. I'm thrilled to introduce you today to Liz Burton. Liz is a menstrual cycle educator and creatress of Wild Womb Co. Through workshops, presentations, and online courses, she's on a mission to spread period awareness and deliver the education on cycles that you really should have gotten in school. I was lucky enough to meet Liz at an event in Sydney recently, and she was so kind as to have me stay with her in Newcastle on my way up to the East Coast to my new home in Byron Bay. I hope you enjoy listening to this insightful conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. And as always, if you're loving what you're hearing, be sure to take a screenshot and share it to your stories and share it with a friend. Leave a lovely rating and review. I would love to hear your thoughts on the show. All right, here's Liz. All right, welcome, Liz. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? What are you passionate about?
Thank you so much for having me on. So yeah, my name is Liz and I teach people about the menstrual cycle and about fertility awareness in a very small nutshell, but we're going to talk a lot about this. I'm really excited to share this with you. And this really started off the back of my own journey, and why I'm so passionate about it is because I've gone through this journey myself. So I was put on hormonal birth control. I was put on the pill when I was 15, because at the time my bleed was extremely painful and I was having a lot of nausea. I ran out of class one day to be sick while I was in high school, and obviously that was not a great position to be in, so my mum took me to the doctor, and that was my option that they told me to go on, so that's what I went on. And at the time it was convenient, all my friends were on it, and yeah, so it just seemed like the best option at the time. And then from there I was on it for a couple years. Throughout that time I transitioned between a few different types of pills because my body was just reacting and having quite bad side effects to different types, and eventually ended up on the Implanon, which I was then on for a total of 7.5 years. So yeah, all up 10 years on the little synthetic hormone swimming through my system. But towards the end of being on the Implanon, I was getting a niggle from my body just to come off it and I guess look into what my other options were. So when I went to the doctor to get my Implanon changed over, I asked her, like, I was lying on the bed getting ready to have the next one put in, and she basically said to me that if she didn't change it, I would get pregnant. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. I didn't even know how to respond to that because, like, what do you do in that situation? Your doctor's telling you that, she's saying, like, you don't really have a choice.
Yeah.
Because, like, in my mind, that was her not trusting me or my body. So yeah, I left there with tears with the new Implanon in. And then it was another year and a half later that I started having that niggle come up again. And it was when I had really started to dive into doing a lot of emotional well-being work on myself and trying to connect in with my body. But I still felt, I kind of felt like a floating head almost, like I was really not in my body and I didn't know how to get there. And yeah, I had an epiphany one day that maybe the pill was causing this, the hormones floating through me. And I was like, yeah, I've been on this for 10 years now. I have no idea who I am without this. And that led me to, you know, jumping on Google, as you do, and looking up all the side effects of the pill. And I was just amazed that I hadn't been taught this when I first went on it. You know, increased risk of clotting, increased risk of depression, cancers, everything there. So yeah, I made the decision, went and saw a different doctor, and she removed it for me. And then I was in a position where I wasn't ready to get pregnant, so I wanted some form of natural birth control. And that eventually led me down the path of fertility awareness, which we're going to be chatting about today.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that a lot of my listeners will be able to relate to that story of going on and off the pill and trying different types of hormonal birth controls. I was on the pill for 14 years and didn't even question it until the last two, I think, where I started to, yeah, do the same as you, work more on my health and well-being and realizing, hey, why am I putting this random thing in my body every single day? And how is it affecting me in ways that maybe I'm not aware of right now? And who am I without it? I think that it's something that, like you said, we're never really educated as to what this thing does, what the side effects could be, how it could impact us long term. And we do stay on it because of that fear of, well, if I'm not on some kind of hormonal birth control, how do I control whether or not I want to get pregnant? And we are often given it as like the only option. So I'm so excited to learn more about fertility awareness. It's something that I've been using in some way, shape, or form for a while, but I know that you are much more educated on this. So tell us, what is the fertility awareness method and why do you recommend it?
Yeah, thanks. So and just a quick point back there as well, like when you were saying you were learning all of the side effects and when I started to dive into understanding my body and the different fertility signs, which I'll explain in a moment, that actually made me really frustrated that I hadn't been taught this education sooner. And is why I'm kind of doing this work now, because, you know, we need to have these conversations. We need to be talking about this and actually have this understanding of our body. So yeah, fertility awareness has definitely given me that tool. So in a nutshell, fertility awareness is multiple methods of tracking your fertility signs, and there are different kind of branches underneath that, but as a collective they're all called fertility awareness. So that can kind of range from things that I guess we were talking about this yesterday. When we talk about fertility awareness, so many people just think of the rhythm method, so counting your cycle days, and then kind of everyone has a 28 day cycle, you ovulate on day 14 kind of thing,
but
is not the case. I think it's like 20%, I can't remember the exact number, but it's around 20% of the population actually have a 28 day cycle,
so there's 80% of us who that method would not work. It's oversimplifying.
Definitely. I mean, and it's given us a tool to kind of have that base understanding, but in reality, anywhere from 24 to 36 days is what you're looking at for a healthy cycle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So the different fertility signs that people track with understanding fertility awareness and understanding their body are basal body temperature. So that changes throughout our cycle depending on the level of progesterone present. And then our cervical fluid is another big one, and that changes depending on whether estrogen is dominant or progesterone is dominant. And then things like your cervical position changes during your cycle, which is just amazing. And like I said, when I was learning all of this information, I was just blown away, A, that my body was this incredible, but also like why was I learning this at 25? So, yeah.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I wish that I had learnt this sooner, and all of the clients that I work with now are just the same, amazed that our body is so bloody smart. And that it's talking to us constantly. If we were taught menstruation education in high school, I feel like so many people around the world would be more in tune with their bodies and just have such a better connection with ourselves and with our partners. So I want to ask you a little bit more about these biomarkers for fertility. So actually, first of all, when we say fertility awareness, I think for me in the past, my past Eleanor self heard the word fertility and was like, nope, don't want to get pregnant. Why on earth would I want to learn about a fertility awareness method when I don't want to get pregnant? So can you speak on that before we go into the biomarkers?
Yeah, we've definitely associated the word fertility with pregnancy for so long. And to a degree, I mean, we need to be fertile to get pregnant, but it's not just about having a baby. It is really tied in with our overall well-being, and our whole reproductive system is tied in with our overall well-being, which is why I find it mind-boggling that we're taught that it's okay to just shut off this part of ourselves. Yeah. I don't know, to me it'd be like shutting off your kidney function or something. Like, really, that's what we're doing.
And it's like shutting it off until you need it again.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous, because we do need it for during our whole lives, but like you said, we attach fertility to pregnancy and think, oh, that's a far off concept, especially when we're, you know, in our teen years and our early 20s, it's not something that we're thinking of, and maybe it's something that we're never thinking of. And so when we attach fertility to pregnancy, we just don't even think about it. So can you tell us more about why these markers of fertility are important regardless of if you're trying to have a baby?
Yeah. So what it really comes down to is the hormones that are playing around in our body. And they're basically like little chemical messengers sending signals around our body. So the main thing with shutting off our cycle with hormonal birth control, and I mean, there's a place for it, definitely, but to be shutting it off for so long, as many people do, yourself and myself included, we shut off our body's ability to make a natural form of progesterone, and we need our progesterone for maintaining our body. So it helps to maintain our bones and our tissues and And it's really effective as like our body's anti-anxiety hormone. It's really important in our sleep system. So when we're shutting that off, and yes, there is a synthetic version of the progesterone in the pill, but it doesn't do the same thing within our body, especially for our mental state, as our normal like self-produced progesterone would do. And then on the flip side, we've also got the synthetic estrogens as well pumping around in our body. So yeah, they play in differently as well than what our normal estrogen would be doing too.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So let's go into the fertility awareness method. And so from my understanding of the fertility awareness method, this is what I want to use to understand my body, whether or not I'm trying to get pregnant or actively trying not to get pregnant. So you can use this method either end of the spectrum. And there are different markers, you call them biomarkers, in your body that tell you where you are at in your cycle and if it's likely to get pregnant or not. So can you tell us a little bit more about these biomarkers and what they do and how we can learn more about our body and our fertility?
Yeah, so these biomarkers are essentially our body's way of talking to us, and we really should be viewing our cycle and our period as our fifth vital sign. It's like our monthly report card checking in with us. So I'll talk with the cervical fluid first. That changes depending on whether we've got estrogen present. So typically at the beginning of your cycle, you'll have your bleed once your previous hormones have dropped off, and then you'll have a slow build of estrogen, and that will cause your cervical fluid to become more wet, more slippery, quite stretchy and clear type. And then after ovulation, once progesterone peaks, that then becomes more of like a mucus plug, which is actually really important as part of our immune system. it kind of acts as a barrier between that external and internal world. So we see those changes progress through checking our cervical fluid each day. And I would encourage you to start doing this in your listeners. I know you do it already, but just notice, like, if you start to have more of that lubricative liquid fluid during certain times of the cycle. And yes, that can be sometimes confused with arousal fluids, but you may start to notice that pattern in yourself. And it's actually really beautiful to notice. And again, this is something we were talking about yesterday, but like, I remember when I was a teenager thinking I was the only person that had stuff in their undies, and trying to, like, I'd go to sleepovers and try and like hide that and shove that away. And I didn't know any better. But now that I know all of this about my body, and I know that that's normal, that it's producing this fluid, and it's actually a really vital part of my health as well. It's so much more beautiful. So
yeah, I think it's amazing. I was the same as you. I always thought that this fluid, this discharge that was coming out of me was gross, and that there was something wrong with me. Or I remember as a teenager, especially when, like, I was probably getting that like post-ovulatory kind of fluid, I was like, am I aroused right now? I'm just sitting in math class. Am I aroused right now? I feel wet. What's going on? But really, it's just my body doing its natural thing throughout the cycle. Some days there's not much there. Other days there's a lot there. And knowing that there's nothing wrong with that is amazing. And then taking it another level deeper, knowing that that's telling me something very, very vital about my body is amazing. So can you tell us a little bit on the cervical fluid, how it changes at different times of the month and what that's telling us specifically? So I know you spoke about the mucus plug and things like that. I know that we're all familiar with that, like, kind of egg yolky, stringy type of fluid. And then we've got, you know, different kind of consistencies. So can you speak to what those consistencies mean and what they can indicate to us about whether we're potentially ovulating or not?
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. So Yeah, as I said, we have our bleed to kind of start our cycle. So that's the fluid that you would predominantly be seeing. And then once your bleed stops, you tend to have, like, it's then a low level of estrogen, low level of progesterone. So it typically can be quite dry, or it's can be quite pasty or sticky. And then as we go through our cycle and start to see that rising estrogen, you'll notice, and again, this looks slightly different for each person, but some people may find it go straight from like the dry to the really wet type, but some people find that they've got more of a progression between like a sticky and then like a creamy, and then progressing into that quite slippery feeling fluid. As you said, yeah, it looks like egg whites and it's quite stretchy. You can, like, if you have a piece and you're stretching it between your fingers, you'll be able to stretch it a few centimeters. And then, yeah, so that actually, with the rising estrogen, we then have a little peak of luteinizing hormone, and I won't go too much into the other hormones here, but that then causes ovulation. So we have this rise in estrogen, and estrogen has to kind of hit a certain threshold before ovulation is then triggered. But we can, like, the cervical fluid we can use to kind of open that fertile window and go, you know, the body is gearing up for potential ovulation here. And then once we've ovulated, our body produces progesterone, and that and the estrogen drops off, and that progesterone then causes that mucus. And this is all happening within your cervix. The cervix has different crypts that release different types of fluid, which I think is so cool. But yeah, so the progesterone dominant, we've got higher progesterone, it turns into that, like, it can become quite dry again. You may still find it is a little bit sticky, but it is quite dry towards the end of your cycle. Yeah, and then we start our bleed again. So,
and then it all just keeps going around.
Yeah, and again, as I said, like, once you start to track this, you'll find a normal within your own pattern. And I mean, this is like what I just described is kind of like your typical healthy cycle. And I'm saying that in inverted commas, in quotation marks, sorry. And that will, like, some people will find their own rhythm with their body within that kind of system. The things that would spark, like, I need to look deeper, would be if you've got that buildup of estrogenic type fluid and then it drops off, and then you've got a, like, a massive buildup again of it. Sometimes you can have a little peak, like around day 21 of your cycle. But yeah, if it was like really building up and then dropping off again and then really building up again, and you've got quite an extended cycle length, and that can be sort of typical of something like PCOS. Your body's really trying to ovulate and it's just not quite happening. So, I mean, it's really beautiful, because once we start to track this, our cervical fluid, we can start to get a better indication of what's happening on a hormonal level and see whether or not that's kind of within normal parameters for your normal.
Amazing. So cervical fluid, we love it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It can teach us so much. And it's also perfectly natural. I think that's so powerful for everybody to know. And yeah, take that away with you. So, okay, we've spoken about cervical fluid, and tell us about basal body temperature. What is that, and why do we use this as a marker of where we're at in our cycle and potential for fertility?
Yeah, so we use basal body temperature to confirm ovulation. So our basal body temperature, and like, my mind was blown when I learned this, that our body temperature changes throughout our cycle. So it tends to be fairly low and steady, and then once we've ovulated, progesterone rises, and that actually boosts our body temperature slightly. And there are certain rules, depending on the methodology of fertility awareness that you're using, to be able to then confirm ovulation. But yeah, you will typically see a rise in body temperature, and that will be sustained until your next bleed, and then it will drop off. And that's actually, it's actually another beautiful reason why I love tracking my body temperature and understanding my body, is because I, especially being on the Implanon, I never knew when my period was coming. And that always used to frustrate me and was why I viewed that as such an inconvenience. And so many people that I talked to are in the same boat with that. So through tracking my cycle and through understanding my body temperature, I know that my body temperature will drop off a day or two before I get my bleed. So I know, and through other things, I can kind of do counts as well to work out when my next bleed is. But it means that I more accurately know I can be better prepared. It's no longer an inconvenience for me, which has also really empowered me as well. So
amazing.
Our body is so cool.
Our body is so cool. I just think that's so amazing that, yeah, there's so many indicators happening and it's always happening. It's just a matter of, do we take the time to learn and tune in and understand what my body is telling me? Because it's always talking to us. It's just a matter of, are we listening? So with the basal body temperature, I just want to clarify as well for our listeners that this is the body temperature at the very, very start of the day when you're still in bed. It's not just like I'm hot today because it's hot. That kind of thing. Yeah, can you explain a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so it's our resting body temperature, the lowest rate of our body temp. And we can get that, first thing in the morning after 3 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. So obviously if people are struggling with that, there are specific thermometers that you can get that are things like the temp drop, which you can, that's a wearable one. And you can use it all night. Otherwise, you can usually get a basal body temperature thermometer from your local pharmacist or chemist. And sometimes it's called an ovulation thermometer. But the difference between that and a regular thermometer is that it measures to 2 decimal points as opposed to just one. So you want that higher accuracy reading.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I've used other ones that are Bluetooth and link with apps. Yeah. What we might do is put in the show notes the link to Temp Drop. I know you were telling me about how great beautiful. That one is. So we've got cervical fluid, basal body temperature, and
cervical position.
Okay. So cervix.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit more about the cervix and then cervical position? I know that a lot of people, again, we're not taught a lot about our bodies. Some people aren't aware of what the cervix is and where it is. So let's start with that and then what the positioning means in terms of fertility.
Yeah. So the cervix is a little organ that sits at the base of your uterus, kind of in between the uterus and the vaginal canal. And you'd be able to find it if you, some people need to get into like a squatting position, but if you insert a finger into your vagina, you'll be able, that ends at some point. You'll be able to feel something kind of at the top of that. And some people have that sitting quite high, some people that can be quite low, and that moves throughout your cycle as well. So when we're ovulating, it tends to retract further up into the body and becomes quite soft, and the opening will open. And then after we've ovulated, that will drop back down deeper into the vagina, so kind of more external, and becomes quite firm. So it's like, I like to think of it, when I was first learning, I learned that when it's ovulating, it's kind of the softness of your lips. And then when it drops back down, it's like the firmness of your nose.
Is everybody doing that?
Yeah. Like we're right all now? We're sitting here tapping our nose, lips.
Okay, so soft lips.
Yeah.
And like the tip of the nose. So, okay, this to me is the coolest thing. I talk a lot when I am teaching my students and working with my clients about the cervix in terms of cervical orgasms, because they're the most powerful, wonderful orgasms that you can have. So it's really, really great to be familiar with our cervix. And I just think it's really cool that it goes up and down essentially throughout the month. And when we know this, you're going to talk about this in a minute about how it relates to fertility, but when we know that it moves, it actually makes a lot of sense as to why certain sex positions feel good 1 week and bad the next, because maybe you're getting too close to the cervix or you're not hitting it and that's where the pleasure is. Everybody's different. Sometimes the cervix feels amazing. Sometimes it feels awful to be stimulated. And that again makes sense because sometimes it's soft like your lips, sometimes it's hard like your nose, and that's going to create different sensations as well. So not only is the cervix an amazing tool for pleasure, but it explains why our body is so different in so many ways every single day, because we are cyclical beings. And so when we're looking at pleasure and sex, amazing to know that. And then in terms of fertility, tell us a little bit more about what that is indicating. So we know that when it's high, that's ovulation. And so that's kind of indicating that we're more likely to get pregnant, right?
Yeah.
If we're having unprotected sex with a penis.
So for pregnancy to happen, we need an egg, we need a sperm, and we need cervical fluid as well, because that actually helps to transport the sperm up into the fallopian tubes where it will meet the egg. But yeah, as it retracts into the body, it does open up more, so it can allow, and with the cervical fluid that tends to be present at that time with the like egg white type, really slippery, that will help to kind of bring the sperm up into the uterus and into the fallopian tubes.
Amazing. So it's all working together.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. And then, yeah, it drops down after ovulation. And if you were to look at an image of the cervix, you would notice that it becomes quite, it looks quite puckered or closed. So that just acts as like another barrier as well. And as I said before, as part of your immune system to act as that barrier.
Amazing.
Towards our reproductive system. Yeah.
So when the cervix is dropped and it's closed, essentially it's like, you shall not pass. This is not the time for us to get pregnant.
But I mean, we use that as more of like a secondary, that's how I've been taught, is to use that one as more of a secondary sign. Because obviously it can change with other things going on as well. Yeah. So, it's just another beautiful way to track. Yeah.
That's so cool. So this is something that when you're tracking, if you're like, okay, I'm going to use the fertility awareness method. Of course we're listening to this episode, but we're also going to work one-on-one with Liz or do a program with Liz at some point to learn the ins and outs of fertility awareness. If you're like, okay, I'm going to use this, how are you testing your cervical height? You said, popping your fingers in.
Yeah.
And so are you sort of measuring, this is how far it could go this day? How do you do that?
Yeah. So as I said, each person will find like their normal as to where it typically sits, but when I was learning, I went off how many knuckles have I inserted into my vagina. So if I've only inserted two one day, then it's obviously, and then I can feel my cervix is obviously feeling a bit, it's sitting lower than if I need to kind of like squat and insert my whole finger. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, absolutely. Cool. That makes sense. I think it's kind of like a ruler, right? You're trying to figure out how high up it is.
Each day. I'll just add in a quick note as well. If you're checking your cervix internally, please make sure you're practicing proper hygiene. Wash your hands beforehand.
Yes.
And we shouldn't really be inserting soap or anything up in there as well. It's self-cleaning. That's a topic for another day, but yeah.
I think that's a great topic. Let's just do a little tangent time on that, because I've had clients and even friends ask me like about that, like Femfresh and Eve or whatever these soaps are that are marketed to us to have like floral smelling vaginas.
Our vaginas aren't meant to smell like flowers. Thank and our vulvas.
Thank you. Okay. Let's clarify this once and for all. We don't put any type of soap or anything up inside our vagina.
Yeah.
So people who are using those washers, what would you say to them?
I would just say, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, and I suppose if you're using them, I don't know personally, but I imagine there may be a bit of a transition period, but your body is, and especially your vagina and your vulva, it's self-regulating. Like it has its own pH level. And the thing is, we can also then use that information. If it is smelling bad, or if you have some sort of weird discharge, maybe it's a different color or slightly yellowish, then that is actually your body giving you another sign that something is going on and needs to be looked at further. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah, and you don't need to just wash it away with some floral. So
yeah, yeah, that's just kind of band-aiding the whatever's gone on lying underneath.
So with those kind of washes, I know that in the past I've been like, no, don't use them, because obviously we don't want anything to disrupt how absolutely perfect and self-cleaning our vagina, our vulva is. I have a lot of people say, oh, but how do I clean myself then? Mm. Like, wouldn't that be gross? Wouldn't that be like make it dirty if I'm not washing it? So how do you sort of answer that question?
I just use warm water while I'm in the shower. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. That's quite easy.
Exactly.
It's nothing complicated.
It is. Absolutely. I agree. It's the same. I'm just like, I'm washing my whole body with like my soap and everything. And then on my most delicate, special, like loved area, just some water and just like your hands, you're cool. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I love that we just did a little tangent on that because I think it's really important. Okay. So is there anything else about the fertility awareness method that you want to talk about? We've got those three biomarkers. Are there anything else that we want to look at?
Yeah, so there are other biomarkers that you can track as well. As I said, they're more secondary. The predominant ones we use are the cervical fluid and the basal body temperature. So there are other things like you can do progesterone testing and you can do LH testing, or they're called like ovulation kits. And that just kind of gives you another indication. But, yeah, they're kind of secondary because they can differ between people and you could potentially get positives when it's not necessarily, like, ovulation isn't necessarily happening. I won't go too much into the science behind that, but you could essentially get a positive LH test and then your body doesn't actually ovulate. It's just kind of an indication that ovulation is going to happen probably soon. So
amazing. So if we want to use this to actively prevent or try to actively prevent pregnancy or actively try to conceive, what else do we need to know? Is there is this enough information? I assume not. And how do we go about really committing to this method, especially if we're trying to prevent pregnancy? Like, we want to be really careful.
Yeah. If you're like 100%, I don't want to get pregnant, then the information in this podcast definitely isn't enough to stop that. This is a very intro level. And as I said, there's kind of rules to follow. And especially depending on the methodology that you're using, they have different rules as to when you can have unprotected sex. But I think the biggest takeaway that I want people to know is that you can't predict ovulation with your basal body temperature. So a lot of the apps that are out there that use just body temperature, and I'm going to name them, Natural Cycles and Daisy, they may be effective, but they are basically predicting your ovulation using an algorithm based off your previous temperatures, which would be fine if our cycle was the same every cycle, and it's not. Like, it can be affected so much by stress, especially with everything going on in the world at the moment, and it can be affected by sleep and by travel. So that's where the cervical fluid comes in really beautiful, because that actually helps us to open that that fertile window, and because that can happen earlier or later, depending on what is happening in your life. So just something to be mindful of if you are using those, just be aware that there are limitations to that. And as I said at the very beginning, there's different methodologies. So you're going to have different efficacy rates with the different methodology that you're using. So if you're just tracking your period with an app like Flow or Clue, and I actually think those apps are quite amazing because they give you better insight into everything else that kind of changes through your cycle as well, which can be quite beautiful and can be a beautiful tool to take into your doctors and be like, yeah, this was the last time I was bleeding. But again, that works more of like a modern kind of rhythm method for if it's just predicting you based off when you've previously put in when your periods were. So yeah, that's got a lower efficacy rating than if you were doing the symptothermal method, which is the cervical fluid and the basal body temperature together with that, with our powers combined. Little throwback there. That's been found to have the highest efficacy rating. So, amazing. And it can be up to 99.6% effective.
Right.
If I'm remembering numbers off the top of my head correctly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Amazing. Okay. So, yeah, we want as many indicators as possible if we're going to really commit to this for especially preventing pregnancy, but also if we're trying. So I know that in my experience, I have definitely used a bunch of different apps like Natural Cycles and things. Natural Cycles I find really alarming because it has this big red thing saying like use protection, or like big green thing saying you're okay. And I think that can obviously be dangerous if you're only doing just the charting of when you last had your period, or that and only basal body temperature and not understanding your cervical fluid.
Yeah. Well, I do also wonder if that's still causing disconnect from our body, because we're relying on an app to tell us that as well. Like, we're not, I mean, yes, you're kind of connecting in, but yeah, on what level?
That's a great point. I really like that. I think that it is very easy for us to kind of hand over our power. And
well, we do it with our doctors.
Exactly. Yeah. We're handing it over to our doctors who say, take this false hormone until you want to get pregnant. And then obviously some women, some people struggle to get pregnant when they want to get pregnant if they've been on the pill for very, very many years. And then with the apps, we may be like kind of dropping down a little bit and trying to tune in a little bit more, but maybe we're still handing over the power and saying, oh, the app will tell me instead of my body will tell me, and then I'll know. Yeah. So with me, for example, I've been tracking for a while. I went off the pill a couple of years ago. I was doing the basal body temperature. I was doing the cervical fluid. I haven't done cervical height, so I haven't committed to that practice, but I'm definitely keen to dive more into that. And in terms of actively preventing pregnancy, I know that for me, the method I was using was, okay, I know in these times I'm probably safe when that cervical fluid comes out, and I'm aware that that's the ovulatory kind of phase, and knowing my cycle and everything like that. If I was going to have sex, I would have protected sex during those times. The other times I would feel comfortable not using protection. Obviously, a little disclaimer, STI tests and checks and the conversations around that were had well in advance before we decided not to use protection. But I would use, around that phase where I knew I was potentially ovulating, I would use either condoms or a diaphragm. Can you speak a little bit more about how long we are ovulating for? Because I know that that's very misunderstood, and because a lot of people will tell you you can only get pregnant one day of your cycle, but that's kind of misconstrued with we're only ovulating one day of the cycle, but we could get pregnant. Can you speak a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so we do only have one ovulation event, and the egg only lasts for about 12 to 24 hours after that. But we then need to take into consideration that within our cervical fluid, that beautiful stretchy egg white type, that sperm can live up to 5 days in there. So we've got to take that into consideration, which is why I say like we use our cervical fluid to open that fertile window. As soon as we start to see that, we know that estrogen's rising. We know that we've got conditions within our body that sperm could potentially survive in until we ovulate. So yeah, we've got to take that window into consideration as well.
Amazing. So yeah, so if you're having unprotected penetrative sex with someone, then you're, if they come inside you 5 days before you ovulate, like that's when you're at risk or like potential to get pregnant because of that cervical fluid. Amazing. I think that's so important to know. But there is a lot more, obviously, to this method if you're going to commit to it. Just like Liz said before, if you're wanting to commit to this method, I think it's really important to work with a professional rather than just kind of listening to podcasts here and there, reading a couple of books.
The higher efficacy ratings come in as well as working with because they'll be able to help with how you're seeing that within your body too.
Amazing. So can you tell us a little bit more about your programs and what you offer in terms of your work?
Yeah, beautiful. So I also offer menstrual cycle awareness, which is tapping into the energetic and emotional and physical and spiritual and all the juicy parts of us that actually change and fluctuate throughout the cycle. And so I've got an upcoming program on that happening this month, which I'm super excited for. And so I am just about to finish my qualifications to be able to offer the fertility awareness training. So if you guys are listening to this by the end of 2020, my course for that should be out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. So amazing.
It's so wonderful to know more about our bodies and to learn and to educate everybody out there about how fabulous and smart our bodies are. So thank you so, so much for sharing all of your wisdom today about the fertility awareness method. What we're going to do is put in the show notes some links to your programs, how to get in touch with you. Do you want to just let us know what your Instagram handle is in case anyone's really, really keen to go and find you?
So my Instagram handle is wild.womb.co. So W-I-L-D full stop WOMB.CO.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So everybody go and find Liz and learn more and more about your fertility. I hope that this episode was enlightening for you. And as always, stay sensual.